Welcome to PLM Evolution, your gateway to the forefront of digital thread and digital transformation, and all things PLM. On this show, we'll unpack the perspectives of industry pioneers, bringing you compelling conversations from the dynamic world of product innovation at today's leading enterprises. Now, here's your host, Patrick Sullivan.
All right. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Digital Transformation Through the Eyes of PLM podcast, formerly known as the PLM Quick 30. So if you're looking for the PLM Quick 30, you are in the right place. I'm your host, Patrick Sullivan, and I'm very, very excited to have this conversation today with an individual. It's especially at this point in my life, up to this point, you always ask yourself, I wish I had somebody who's been there, done that, and can give me words of wisdom on how to be more efficient, how to be better at what I do and my outlook in life. And today, you're going to have the benefit of learning from this individual. He's been coined as the professor within the organization of Archer Gray. And I'm pleased to announce that today is his official day of being reborn, as he is officially retired from Archer Gray as of yesterday. And so February 1st, 2023, our guest today is Larry Liu, and he has a bright rebirth future ahead of him, but he has accepted the invitation to record this podcast, and I'm thrilled that you're doing it. Thank you for getting up early, Larry. I appreciate it.
And actually, the first thing I got up this morning is that my wife told me that, Larry, you are famous because the Tom Brady followed your footsteps, his unless his retirement.
You're a trendsetter. All right. So normally I like to go through a little process of background and an introduction of self, but, Larry, you know what, you're retired and I view you as a close friend and a respected person in my life. So I'd love to just kick this off with a quick story of it. And I don't know why it replays in my mind, but it does frequently. But when somebody says Larry Liu, and I've already said the thing about the professor, which is very true, and I've got some things that I want to ask you about, I have one particular vision in my brain about you. And we were at a conference where it was PTC's conference. And I think it was the first time that you had joined us at a conference. And I saw you halfway through the day, and you had a huge spring in your step. And I said, hey, Larry, how's it going? And you're like, oh my gosh, I can't even believe it. I feel like a kid in a candy store. There's so many classes I want to go to.
Oh my gosh,
your enthusiasm and thirst for learning, I think, is really something that I want to understand more about, because it's your optimism and your enthusiasm and your passion and how you approach life is inspiring. And I just want to know more about that. Like, where does it come from? Were you born with it? Is it learned?
Well, it just got me excited when I learned the new things. And, you know, and as a consultant, you never really feel that, there's enough knowledge that you could provide, you know, to the customer. And every time when I go to the PTC conferences, and there's just so many different areas, because when you are working, that the only specific area that you are focusing on, right? But when you are in that particular conferences, that there are so many different area that outside of your normal focus, that you could really expand it, something that really you never even thought about it, right? And that is what really excited me. And when I learn new things, and I feel excited. Actually, just yesterday, I just learned how to program a new UV box. I just purchased and I received it yesterday and for myself as a retirement, you know, gift. And I just learned.
What's a UV box?
A UV box is a box very much similar to the Fire Stick. That yeah. You
know, oh, okay.
Allow you to be able to get to the instead of just the Prime or get to all the different apps, it allowed you to be able to see all different type of TV program, movie program, and everywhere around the world, not just the U.S., Japan, Korea, Asia, Turkey, India. And even have some game, and just like I just felt there is that excitement. Even when I was a kid, I think it started.
That's a perfect example of what I'm talking about, because most people talk about retirement of settling in, getting to do more of what they do, like golf or what have you. But no, you've started a new project in an area that you've never done anything before. And although you get to relax and watch the TV or programs around the world that you want to do, in order to do that, you have to figure out how to program the UV box.
Yeah, it's something that I think I was very similar when I was a young kid. I think when I was in junior high school, and outside of school, I learned harmonica, I learned English, I learned Japanese, I learned play guitar, and all at once, in the same semester.
What do you say to people that say you need to focus on one thing at a time in order to succeed at that?
I think you need to have your focus, but it does not mean that you cannot have additional expanded territory. For example, in the music, I enjoy singing and I enjoy choir and I enjoy playing guitar. That's my main thing. But that does not stop me from pick up a violin and try to, scare the neighbor people and, create a squeaking sound, whatever, right? And so you can always learn something new. And there are just, that's how I look at it. And it just make it more fun, because if you spend 8 hours on this one thing, you probably got tired of it. And then so it's, in the meantime, if you have time, do something else and, do something, for example, do some reading and do some biking and walk the dog. And at the same time, when music wise, I play guitar and I try to learn piano and I try to learn the violin. And although I'm not very good at either one of them, but I focus on guitar.
Yeah. Yeah. That's incredible. There was a gentleman, I think I was walking at Venice Beach in California. And I think it was by Muscle Beach. And this guy had a large crowd of people around him. And he was taking requests of songs from people. And so I looked over the crowd and he had a guitar in his hand. He had a bass guitar at his feet.
I saw that.
He had a snare drum on his back. He had another thing and he was controlling him with his elbows. And then he had a harmonica and obviously was singing a song. And somebody says, Michael Jackson beat it. So he starts with the bass line with his feet, playing with his toes. And come to find out, I don't know if this is true. This might be myth. But I found out later that he was a runner, a good one, and also a doctor, possibly. I don't know if those are myth or not, but... regardless, just the sheer talent to play all those instruments at one time. It's incredible.
And I even saw one guy that was doing everything, the multiple instruments. And guess what? He put all the instrument attached to his bike and riding the bike while doing it.
That's a talent.
So it's just like, you know, there's always another level you can take it to. So
I know. Forget Bluetooth and having a phone for music. You just play it while you ride.
Your imagination is what, you know, really, you know, take you to it. You're only limited by your own, you know, imagination. That's how I look at it.
So let me shift stories here. And then to your point of imagination, you know, we've worked together for nearly 15 years. And I remember going to you to ask to help with developing a proposal for a client. And you said, because it wasn't a specific technical challenge, it was kind of like, hey, let's structure this. They want to improve, and there's lots of different areas. So it was an assessment to build a roadmap and then determine what things they wanted to invest in from there. And we had some preliminary things that they wanted to do, and they were kind of grandiose. And you said, what's their budget? Because I can do some variation of an assessment and deliver value, but let's just capture the budget that they have available and let's not make it difficult. And your comment on imagination of taking some type of parameter and then building from there was what I appreciated about that experience. I also deal with folks that want to know the specific scope, and then the level of effort is what it is, whether you have enough money or not. There, I don't know if I'm explaining it accurately enough, but there's a disparity in philosophy there. Can you help kind of navigate to an answer of why you say, well, let's just make something good of what we can make it with versus wish we had something else?
I don't know. Maybe we just try to be more realistic and try to work with the a parameter, because I always try to define the requirements and to set a parameter, because you could, you know, draw up a pie in the sky, but when you come to the customer, you always have to put yourself in the customer's shoes first. The person that you deal with also have someone that they have to deal with. They have a lot of the people they report to. All right. So you have to put yourself in their perspective. If they have certain budget they were given, and you have to realize that for them to go back to the well and asking for more money, it's going to be an extra burden to your customer you are serving to. So you have to put yourself in their perspective first and have the empathy in what kind of difficulty they will have to go through in order to do that. It doesn't mean that you cannot put another follow-up proposal. So you put an initial proposal that fit into the parameters that you have to work with, allow them to be able to build a success story. And to me, for them to be able to build up a success story that they can quickly take it and share with their the people and take it to the management and say, hey, this is something that we achieve with what was given. Now, if you allow me to have additional funding, this is what I can achieve for them. I think it's a win-win situation.
Yeah. Yeah. I, as you were talking about that, so you had a previous relationship, and as I stated, you know, we've been working together for 15 years. So you had a relationship prior to coming to Archer Gray, and you know, now I consider them a friend as well, this particular client. And I know that you know who I'm talking about. Yeah. So your key word in what you were describing there is empathy for their situation and then building success stories. So I'm curious, for this mutual friend now, and I'm proud to be able to say that, and thank you, by the way. Bring me all the way back to the beginning of that relationship. Why did it come to a culminating event where, like, one friendship, and then when you break down the meaning of friendship, there's loyalty, there's trust, right? There's honesty. There's a whole bunch of things that you can start to peel apart. But in business, that's not, unfortunately, it's not a regular thing that people typically experience. The things that we just described about your creativity to take what's given to you and make something of it, how do we apply that to that scenario? Like, well, what were the beginning stages and why, what was your approach that helped you, one, well, just develop such a long-lasting friendship and relationship built off of those values that I just described?
I think it all based on one very basic principle. You always put yourself at the other people's shoes. And as a consultant that we work for a client, we work for the mutual success. You look for the win-win situation. So in that particular situation, actually, we eventually built a very, good relationship, but it didn't start out that way. On the contrast, when we first started, the story is that they had a system that was set up by another consulting firm, and they spent a lot of money. And initially, the individual had some idea, and he was very adamant about, using that. And because he wanted to, look at it from the user perspective, make some customization to make some things that simple for a user to use it. And for some reason, not sure if that's the main reason or not, the system was very unstable. They have the system, really crashing on, on a constant basis. If I say it on a daily basis, probably it's not over exaggerated. So they struggled that, in over almost a year. And then until they, almost they were going to give up on it. The entire system, the POM system. And so they come to us and asking, say, hey, if there's something that you could help. And they were very, very suspicious at the very beginning. They asked a lot of questions. They have IT people, they have the technical expert, they have multiple people asking the questions, and we have multiple call. And even after that, and they asking us to put a specific things that we want to do, and they asking for a specific deliverable and only give us 3 weeks in the beginning. And so we know that was an uphill battle from the very beginning, but we took on it and we went in there and look at it and, do an honest evaluation and we'll realize that what that individual asked to do it and was really unnecessary because it really does not provide that much benefit, but add a lot of customization. And actually, in the POM system, you actually created a lot of custom life cycle. It really does not make sense. So I went in there. The first thing that I have to tell them is that, your system, your process, I have to look at their process. I say, your process is not that complicated. Your engineering team, whatever you guys did, this out of box, that simplified process, it's your best approach because that not only simplify your process, it make it easy for everybody to adapt. It make the system much more stable because that's how system was designed. you can eliminate a lot of customization, but most importantly, when you, in the future upgrade, guess how much money you will be able to save and how much easier you don't have to spend extra money for additional customization for something that really does not provide you that much benefit. But because that was, you know, maybe his personal baby, and so we were having some, you know, different opinion. And, but eventually we have to bring his boss, the CIO, into the discussion. And when I explained it to the CIO, CIO saw the value and said, I think Larry's right. Why don't we just give that a try? And we did that. And that in a few weeks, the system starting to stabilize, that we back. And once the system started to stable, and that really opened up the eye for them, and then they started to build a trust. And then, you know, of course, they extended from 3 weeks to 6 weeks.
Right.
And then gradually from 6 weeks, they extended another 6 weeks. And then when things starting to get better and better, they say, oh, let's extend to 3 months. And that 3 months extend to 6 months to a year. And now I have been working with them, you know, for the past 15 years on and off. And we built a relationship.
Yeah, that's a tremendous story, which I know the history on to some degree. And then to your last point of it was a relationship that's on and off. I also know that the same thing exists for other clients that you've worked on while at Archer Gray as well. They came back to us and specifically requesting you to be involved. One, because of that success, you made them look good because of your philosophy of putting yourself in those shoes. But two, and this is another area that I wanted to talk with you about, like your philosophy on overcoming is the back half of a challenge, right? You have to address the challenge first. So, and there's plenty of stories on challenges, right? I can't remember what was going on with golf, but if I remember the story correctly, you decided you wanted to play golf. Historically, your wife was better than you at golf. And you couldn't figure out your swing. You woke up in the middle of the night, like 1 or 2 in the morning. And you were so lost in watching video and trying to figure out your swing, actually swinging the golf club in your bedroom. And your wife woke up and she said, Larry, what are you doing? And you said, honey, I think I figured it out.
Actually, that was at 3 a.m. in the morning, and it's something that I woke her up and show her my new swing that I made. We were still having a good laugh, and I'm so appreciative. She did not hit me in the head with a light bulb.
Well, I bring in that example because, you know, similar to like this project work that we're talking about, and you gave, I know that on these projects you encounter, in some scenarios, are showstop situations. And like, I think of the other client where it was go live weekend and it was not in your roles or responsibilities, and IT infrastructure team was stressing out. And this was a global go live, and it's a Fortune 1000 company. And you didn't sit and wait. I think you were staying up basically 2 days in a row helping them troubleshoot it. And I believe you were the person that found it, even though it was not in your realm of responsibility. So showstopper situation for go live, and you saved the go live, I would say. So just that philosophy of overcoming challenges. And we joked about the golf scenario, but I think it's the same thing. Can you walk us through that a little bit?
The story is that it was a global collide. You have people from all over the world, from Brazil, from, you know, British, from the U.S. and Germany, all, you know, accumulating one, you know, war room. And I have done my part of the, you know, my portion of it was done. It was successful. But for some reason, after that, the go live system starting to become still very unstable. And in the Windchill term, that was something called a cluster setup. And it was something that really is not my, you know, mainstream, and I did not have a lot of experience. I have some reading on it. And so that they were struggling with that. And by that time, actually, I already went through a night without sleeping. But, you know, since everybody was still struggling, I just stay there with them and listen to what they were talking about and realize that, and just kind of listen and think and ask and then as they continue to talk and they actually will bring in the experts on talking to them, and they were troubleshooting and everything. And so I had a benefit of listening to it. And then I just decided to went online and did some search on that particular topic. Then I find out, then as I keep looking at it, I found something just does not add up in my mind. And I wasn't quite sure, because that really is not my, you know, specific area expertise, but I keep working on it. And until I have more confidence later on, then I just started to join their conversation. And I brought that particular point to that particular expert, say, hey, how about this particular property? If we change this property, it's this one set right on the room. And that person looked at it and said, oh, that is where you guys have the problem with. If we change this, that would have solved the problem. And then that is what it was very specifically, you know, it's a cluster set up because you have multiple, you know, background, foregrounds type of scenario. So you have to really done something so different than what you would have done otherwise. And that was something that it was not very obvious in a lot of documentation. And when we caught that and solved that, and system all of a sudden system just becomes stable, and people are just like, oh, it works. It was working. It just wasn't stable. And now finally it was stable because the handshake was finally there. And that was one of those situations. The pure luck, probably.
Well, so why, what's consistent, whether lucky or not, is a challenge comes up. And as you said, your role was finished. Why participate in something that you don't need to and you're not required to? Why address a challenge of that you didn't need to get your hands dirty?
That's my philosophy. When you're working with the client, you always put client's interest upmost at first. And the other thing is a team success. Your individual success really means something, but doesn't mean that much if a team fails. And if a team ultimately success, this is enough credit to go around. You know, you don't have to ask for the personal accolade or anything. And to me, I can care less about the personal accolade or anything. And I didn't say anything about that. It was to our company was the customers that mentioned that, you know, back to relay that information back to you know, I already forgot about it. After I finished, I was so exhausted because I was 30 hours without sleep. But to me, two things. You always put clients' interests first. Secondly, it's a team effort. And that's just my philosophy for my life. And, you know, individually at home, that's the same thing. You know, I cannot put myself interest above me and my wife as a family and my children's interest, totally, you know, collective interest. It's the same thing. That when I work for Archie Gray, it's the Archie Gray's interest is above my personal interest.
I said at the beginning, you know, your nickname within Archie Gray was coined the professor, and right? I know that you're a dynamic speaker, and so I associate speaking with being a professor, and I know that you are good at teaching. But just walking through that, where I'm asking you a question about what I perceive to be a complicated process of seeing a challenge and rolling up the sleeves. And what I'm deriving and hearing you talk, like the art of a good professor is somebody who can explain a complex thing simply. And I think you just did that beautifully. But you just have a life philosophy that's broken down to two things, right? Is that, you know, essentially putting other people first and starting with empathy. And I think that's a beautiful explanation. So thank you for that. On the professor topic, since I'm, you know, kind of a visual guy. So we had our company event. I'm sure you remember this. This was after... Yeah. Again, another client where you had spent 3 years helping train, I don't know, 3,000 people. So we asked you to present, you know, what your methodology was, your approach around it. And I'll tell you the thing that I remember very specifically, and I thought it was spectacular. So we're all in this room. I think we were in Las Vegas, and you're presenting, and you have a clicker in your hand, a remote clicker. And so the whole thing was on the screen and you were explaining of like bringing life and value to the press and the click of a button and what it meant to the user community and all of that stuff. So you would go up to the projection screen, which was just a flat screen, you know, essentially against a wall, but it was being projected up there, and you would press the button. And as you physically pressed like the screen, which was not dynamic, it had no functionality, you would click the button in your opposite hand and it would advance to the other screen. I'm like, that is somebody who like takes it down to the molecular level and makes an experience out of something that could just be a click of a button and you don't even need to be standing there. It was like, I'm like, this guy really is a professor. Did you intentionally do that, or was that just something that you did?
That's how I normally teach to begin with. Yeah, I that was part of my presentation, and I planned it, and I planned that, and I say, well, if I did this, I did that, and it just come normal, and because I thought, well, you know, here's just the screen. And I have to put myself on the audience's shoes again. You have always put yourself on the other people's shoes. If you just look at something, you point something, how would people know why you're pointing at? So you go there and you're pointing at this, they know this, and then you click it, and then you say, oh, okay, that is how. So you can simulate the mouse click on a projector screen.
I thought it was incredible. I still, you know, there's so many little memories that I remember. And, you know, I just wanted to, I'm so happy you agreed to record this because I wanted to hear, you know, what was happening in the preparation of this. Because I know that you rehearse also.
Like, yeah.
The first time you're standing up is not, I'm sorry, what is the first time for me to see you standing up? It certainly is not the first time that you've gone through it. It is so polished.
Yeah. And I think that's part of the a job as a consultant, particularly on the in the training, that you always have to go through multiple process, you know, and keep refining it until oftentimes I have to record myself and then critique myself. And until I can see, oh yeah, if I have done this better or something. I think it's the same philosophy. You know, the best time that I learn how to play or singing is that when I record my own singing. And then I'll be able to hear a lot of things when you're singing, you thought, oh, I did a pretty good job. But once you record it, you hear a lot of little mistakes that you did. And I think that learned from the Dale Carnegie course that I taught way back in when I was in the 80s. I took, you know, two courses of Dale Carnegie, one in the late 80s, and the other one is with Archer Gray. And the one thing I learned about Dale Carnegie is that you always have to earn the time for your own time for your speaking. And to earn that, you have to earn it. You don't take that for granted. So you prepare that. You prepare the material, you prepare your presentation, you have to rehearse that. And then you have to listen to yourself, and then you have to keep working on it until that, you know, you feel really comfortable. And one thing that I did early in my career is that I always ask my kid or my wife to listen to my presentation. And then we record it, and I listen to what they have to say. And your family will give you the most honest critique. If you can withstand that critique, I think you can withstand anything.
Yeah. When we travel as a family, once in a while, I'll pop on one of these podcasts. And as soon as they hear my voice, they all are like, oh my gosh, why are you talking like that? I'm like, I don't think that I transform into a different type of person, but, you know, who knows?
Yeah.
To your point, I try to rehearse in my brain, and then I definitely get some feedback. But I will have you know, my oldest is in college right now, and he texted me a couple of days ago. He's like, Dad, I listened to one of your podcasts last weekend. It wasn't bad. I'll take it.
Oh, that's a huge compliment. Trust me.
I think he's homesick.
That's a huge compliment. And one thing that you'll find out is that as your kid go older and older, they would appreciate you more and more.
Oh, that's good to know. That's good to know. I'll look forward to that. You know, another thing about this on the thirst for learning, and one thing that I wrote down, because I think I told you before we started recording, I just, you know, I wanted this just to be a conversation. And so I did put down just some topics from a mind map perspective of things that I wanted to talk about. And a characteristic of you that I value greatly is your optimism. And I think it comes out in everything that we just described of all these different examples and kind of exploration of, you know, project work and addressing challenges, whether it be golf and having epiphanies in the middle of the night or staying up 30 hours and helping the overall team be successful. And just, I feel like a kid in the candy store. Like, nobody has said that to me in the professional world ever. And so, aside from your thirst for learning, your level of optimism is contagious, and it really has a profound effect on people around you. Can you talk to that a little bit?
I think I don't know how do I pinpoint that, if there's anything. I think you just put things in the proper perspective. And you look at life at the in the total package, and there is a perspective that I think it built up on my personal belief. Well, I have a belief, and I have a faith, and so you know that there is something that you always have something to lean on, and when I encounter the difficulty, I do not get desperate, because I know in the great scheme of things in life, the difficulty that you encounter right now, it's just a bullet of the things that will always, pass. And also it built on top of the experiences that I had before. I have encountered in my professional career so many different challenges, difficulties. And it's, come from small to big to large. And in the past, then I realized that it's okay to be frustrated at the time. But you don't need to get angry or blame other people, and just focus on the issue in itself. And then if you are not able to solve the issue, and think about, why am I not able to solve the issue? Did I not look at it from the right perspective? Do I not bring in the right people or the right team to help me to solve the problem? And then if you look at it, and do not ever put that on yourself, say, oh, I'm just so stupid, I'm just not good enough. It's that it's my inability to solve the problem. Or don't blame other people that you work with. So get out of the blame game. Don't blame yourself, don't blame other people. Then look at it from the perspective, say, why am I not able to solve this problem? So now maybe I'll ask for help. Maybe I need to study more. Maybe I'll asking other people's perspective. And then take a walk, and let your subconscious mind to work. And then asking other people, say, hey, why am I not looking at it right? Even someone does not understand your technical specific, sometimes can point out, say, oh, what if that? This is that. And sometimes it could be just a typo. We have, in my most recent project, we struggled with a connection with the Active Directory, and for over a month, and we'll keep back and forth. At the end of the day, it was just because the information we got has a typo. Mm. And so once you get out of the feel self-pity, blame other people, blame game, and then you start to look for other people, starting to study more. And then, if you can't solve it, just take a walk, and it'll always the next day. And then be honest to communicate the issue, and asking for more people to their advice or something. And eventually, so far, every single issue always get resolved. Honestly, every big project that I worked on, there's always one critical moment that you have to overcome. It almost never have, exceptions. There's always one critical challenges you have to overcome. But guess what? Once you overcome the challenges, everything is smooth sailing.
Yeah, that's thanks for taking my non-question and giving me an excellent answer to it. around optimism and how to have things in perspective. I think that's really a strong perspective and counting on the challenges. You know, we were talking a little bit earlier before we started recording. You were telling me a story about a former colleague and the topic of endurance. I wouldn't mind spending some time revisiting that and then getting into, you know, your expertise in Taekwondo as well. I know that, but this is another story. We were traveling with a client and we were walking by a Taekwondo place, we being you and me. I don't know if you remember it or not, but we were walking to dinner. I think we were going to a Peruvian restaurant.
It was in California, and I think it's only outside the suburb of the Los Angeles, next to a Peruvian restaurant.
Yeah, so we're walking by this Taekwondo place, classes in session, and I didn't know that you had your black belt before this moment. And we were walking by, you looked, and you said, "He's teaching them improperly." And I said, "What?" And then you just did this quick, swift kick at a 45 degree angle. And the way that you snapped your leg, sometimes you just immediately know when somebody is proficient. When you snapped your leg, I'm like, I am never going to mess with Larry ever. And so that's the night that I learned that you're a black belt. So, could you reshare the story of this colleague, this younger colleague who is very persistent and diligent about working out? And the topic is endurance.
I know this person for many years, and he's strong. He is tall. And, you know, handsome man, very, very strong in the well field.
Handsome is a little generous.
No, I believe he is a very handsome and good looking man and very nice people too. But he is, you know, exercise fanatic. And so every time when I go out on the assignment with him, he always go and, you know, go to find a gym and never exception, every single day, and always exercise. And, you know, so one day that he invited me and then we went to a gym that he was exercising, and then he was pumping the iron and showing that how to do those kind of things. And then we went on the treadmill and he would try to show me, you know, show off about, you know, how to run the treadmill. And he looked at me, this old and thin, you know, old man, and he would deter me to kind of show me how to do it. So we'll run on the treadmill next to each other, and then we'll run, and I try to keep pace with him. And after 30 minutes, then he started to look at, you know, turn his head and look at me like in disbelief, and then just like, what? What's going on? He's going to be able to come out with me. And they will continue to run and, you know, continue. And at that time, I was just like, you know, I'm going to show you the old man has some capacity too. So I just keep, you know, running and running. And normally I don't run more than 40 minutes, 30 minutes. But I just decided, you know what, I'm just going to outrun you. So we just keep running and running and running. And until that, I just saw him that he just shook his head and he stopped and then step off the treadmill. And then I run for a couple more minutes and then I stopped and step on the treadmill. And he looked at me. And then after that, he would tell the people, say, never mess with Larry on the treadmill.
Well, I always knew this person was smart. My realization of never to mess with you was when I saw you do a kick, and his realization was when you left him in the dust on a treadmill, if that's possible. Oh, man, that is such a good story on endurance. But for those of you listening who know anything about running, this is where we kind of transitioned about mentality, because it's a paradigm shift. If you aren't used to running and you go to run 2 or 3 miles, you are proud of the 2 or 3 miles, and you should be. But if you've got the capacity to go out and say, I'm going to run 10 miles today or 15 miles, like, it's a whole different mental shift to say, oh, I have to run 10 or 15 miles. What brought into the next topic, I'm like, that's not normal, Larry. So let's dive into this. Why were you able to just start running and just decide you were going to stop because it was time to stop? So,
well, yeah.
Because you have to have that paradigm of, you know, of course I can run for 10 miles. Like, you know, it's normal. So where did that come from?
Well, I think it started from part of my early age, you know, and I started taking the martial art training early age when I was in the middle school. And I take that from my father too. You know, my father was actually the first person in Taiwan. I grew up in Taiwan. And in Taiwan, the first person over 60 that earned the black belt in the history of the Taiwan history, because that's when they brought the Korean, you know, coach over from the Korea. And he was the one that it took the lesson and, you know, build a good relationship with them and actually become buddy buddy. And then he was the first person. And I think I took some of that from him. So I was the, I picked up that. And so I was running, wake up early in the morning, during the middle school. And I would run a couple, you know, laps in school yard. And then I would ride a bike through the dojo. And then I have my, Taekwondo training section and ride back home and then ride the bike to school, which is right now, think of it, it was probably another 40 minutes ride, one way. And I did that for years. And I think that probably built up my, mentality and my stamina. And the funny thing is that, you know, I think I probably grew a few inches in those few years. Seriously.
And I
it's just like, I didn't realize that, I just enjoyed doing it. And then it turned out it was one of the things that actually build a very good foundation for me in life too. So, and then when I also, you know, play at the school baseball team. And we always, you know, baseball team, you know, that, you know, besides the, you know, back baseball practice, that you have to run a lot. And so we ran as a team. And then we ran and ran, and then I realized that, hey, I can outrun most of my teammates. And I didn't realize that. And then, so, you know, when school has a marathon competition, people say, hey, Larry, you should join. And you should enter the competition. Lo and behold, I did. I didn't realize that. And then I almost won the first place. I only lost to one guy that people say that he has no heartbeat. By, you know, the last second of the sprint. And that's when I realized, all the discipline, all the time, the years of the wake up early, running the lab, riding the bike to dojo practice. Because when you do the Taekwondo practice, right now, you know, you're looking back, some of those are pretty intense. Those kicking, those are nonstop. And the coach will purposely try to wear you out if you're able to, you know, hold it, then, you know, and I didn't realize, I just never want to give up. So I just like you. And then during the process, you build up your stamina without, you know, realizing.
So I told you I had this mind map, and the reason my head was down at different times is because I was just writing a few things down as we've been talking. And then I just took some time to put boxes around some things that you had mentioned that jumped out to me. And at the center of my mind map was thirst for learning. And, you know, when I think about this conversation, we cover the topic of endurance, right, from your childhood and your perspective on optimism, which is rooted in your beliefs and how you practice those. And then the topic of you, I think, as a person and how you brought that into your professional life around empathy. And, you know, the example that I cited, although there were multiple that we talked about, was your comment of earn the time. If you're going to, from a professional standpoint, request people's time, you need to earn it, be prepared, rehearse, ask for feedback. So when they're spending the time with you, they're getting the most value from it. And then just your consistency in always being open to learn something new in the spirit of helping people be successful. And it wasn't just professional, as you mentioned, with your wife too. And as I was thinking about all of these boxes and hearing you talk, it's not often that people reflect with the eye of being critical of themselves. And your story about not getting into the blame game and saying, you know, get out of the blame game, focus on the issue, look at it from a different perspective. Are there other people that can help? And it's not your fault. When I think about that story specifically, like you can't say all the things that you've said on this recording without having wisdom. And I view you as a very wise individual, and I think it's rooted in your desire to learn. And it's not just learning information, it's being self-reflective and constantly improving. And then the last word that I boxed around this after this whole monologue is grace. And from the first day that I met you, Larry, you've operated in all of these things that you've talked about. I can't see anything that I've experienced that's been inconsistent. And I would just say, you know, you are at this utopian point, and you conduct yourself with grace. And I'm so proud to have had the opportunity to work with you. And I just want to thank you for spending your career, or at least the last part of your career, with us.
I appreciate it. Thank you. Yeah. Well, you know, well, my dog just jumped into my lap.
Yeah, time for a walk.
She's ready for a walk, man. You always take me out for a walk. Why are we not walking today?
So, Larry, given your dog wants to go for a walk, do you have any parting words of advice before end the podcast?
Well, I appreciate it. And I think, you know, I personally feel very, very fortunate in my last, you know, 13, 15 years of the career to know some of the people at Archway. I could not be more happy and satisfied to work for a place that I can actually call home and feel very comfortable. And I think that a lot of that is because I know the people that I work with, particularly the people that leading the company has the same integrity and trust and character that I always hold, you know, very high for. And so I think it's really, personally, I feel very fortunate. because, you know, you're able to find a place that you work. And, but you also feel that at the end of the day, you can go to sleep with a peace of mind and with gratitude. And so as I, you know, kind of enter my new phase of my retirement, I'm going to go out and meet more people. I'm going to go drive around the country and, enjoy the life. But my goal is that spend more time with my wife and with my family, but at the same time, go visit a small town and that I didn't have time to go to. In the past, they always have to rush through, you know, big town, big city and highway. I'm going to stop by the small town, go to the small diner and sign to talk to some people and get to know them and meet people and have fun. And that's how I want to do. So, but again, I could not be, you know, more grateful for when I was supported and treated than Archie.
Well, we feel the same and we feel very fortunate. So thank you for everything, Larry. And you deserve all the best. Sure. And I appreciate everything you've given.